Welcome to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains. I'm Corby Skinner.
And I'm Jennifer Corning, and we're sharing stories of creative people who live and work in the Intermountain West. Livingston, Montana is known for its access to Yellowstone National Park, its wind, beauty, railroad history, and all things fly fishing. This small town is also significant as a creative capital in this part of the world. Notable authors with ties to Livingston include Thomas McWain, Jim Harrison, Jamie Harrison, Richard Brodigan, and Gats Hortsberg, among many others. So, it's not surprising, Livingston area supports a nonprofit organization which features author lectures, workshops, and more. Today, Yetta Stein, the executive director of Elk River Arts and Lectures, is here to tell us about this inspired enterprise.
Yetta, welcome to Resounds. Actually, you're not in our studio. We're in your office. We came to Livingston to get a little flavor of arts, literature, and all things Livingston. Tell people about your organization.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. So happy to be here today. Elk River Arts and Lectures started in 2013 in partnership with Elk River Books, owned by Mark Bodine and Andrea Peacock. They started this organization to bring in writers from all over the world to give lectures and readings in support of Livingston's rich literary heritage. And the organization has really blossomed into a place that supports all sorts of literary arts endeavors. So we send poets into the fourth grade classroom to teach the young next generation of poets how to write. We support storytelling nights throughout the community where anyone can tell a story to their neighbors about any sort of theme we come up with in partnership with Bex Frucht. We have a writing workshop that we host out at Chico where writers can apply and be lectured to and read to by writers from all across the state and country. And we do all sorts of other one-off programs, statewide book clubs, supporting the Youth Climate Summit, all sorts of fun things.
Jennifer, I'm just thinking of all the people that you didn't mention in the introduction, the poet Michael Earl Craig, who is the Montana Poet Laureate, and my dear friends, Doug and Andrea Peacock, of course, live here. And Andrea, and I think Mark Bodine is her cousin, started Elk River Books. Tell us about that connection. Was one before the other?
Yep, the bookstore started first, and it's a wonderful bookstore, mostly used books and rare books that Mark and Andrea find and provide to folks, both in our community and through their e-commerce site. And they started the nonprofit just a few years after opening the bookstore. They want the nonprofit to be sort of a catalyst for literary community. They want the bookstore to be a place where people can gather, meet with one another, talk about arts and writing and the future of this literary Livingston. So we're very lucky to have this nonprofit arm of the bookstore.
I will tell our listeners, if you haven't been to Livingston, Elk River Books is in a new location, and it's the place where you have your lectures and readings. But I'm wondering, is there a mission for your organization, a stated mission?
Yeah, absolutely. Elk River Arts and Lectures, our mission is really to support the literary arts across Park County. And I think right now, as a new executive director, I'm being asked to think a lot about the vision and future of the organization. Livingston has always had a thriving literary arts world, as you mentioned. So many local writers, poets, and creators of the word live here and spend time here. I think the future of this organization is really set to think about Park County, not just Livingston. Livingston is the home to literary arts in Southwest Montana, but we want to think about how to support our more rural communities, Gardner and Cook City and Wilsall and Clyde Park, all of those places where people are also writing and creating word form art. We want to expand to that those more rural communities.
I would dare say you also serve a much bigger region because you bring in Montana writers from all over the state. So really, you're providing opportunities for those writers to reach out. It's interesting because living in Billings, we have the library, we have bookstores, but it's amazing that a small town like Livingston can have so many activities going on about literature. I'm wondering, who attends these readings?
It's always such a diverse and comical audience. And one of my favorite parts of Elk River Arts and Lectures is the intergenerational nature of our audiences and of what we offer. So you'll see, you know, retired folks who's mostly summer in Livingston, but you'll also see folks my age, anywhere from 12 years old all the way to 75 years older, attending these lectures. I also think it's not just the lecture series that we're proud of, though we do bring writers of all sorts of breadth and depth to Livingston. We're also really proud to be sending those poets into the fourth grade classroom, cultivating that next generation, and featuring those storytelling events where we have storytellers, you know, at age 30 and storytellers at age 75. One of my favorite recent stories was a rancher telling the story of how he fell in love with his long-term second partner after he was widowed. And it was just so moving to have him telling this story to a room full of Park County residents at the Elks Lodge on a snowy Thursday evening.
One of the other programs you have happened during the summer at Chico Hot Springs. That is such an exciting place to be. And then you sponsor a week-long workshop reading series. Tell us about the most recent event at Chico Hot Springs.
Yeah, we have a wonderful writing workshop where writers can apply and actually come from all over the country to attend. That's our program that's led by C. Marie Furman. She's a writer out of Idaho, and she does a wonderful job coordinating and leading that program forward. This most recent writing workshop was the first time we had an all-Indigenous faculty, and it was really centered on those voices that are often deprioritized in the literary arts world. C. Marie did a great job bringing in authors and writers from all over the country to learn from that all-Indigenous faculty. And we're excited to once again have a wonderful writing workshop, this time in October of 2026. So keep an eye out for applications to be open and definitely send us your best.
I think Chris Latray was here. It's interesting, Jennifer and I are both avid readers, and it's fun to look at your list of writers, many who we have interviewed, Jamie Harrison. In fact, Sean Ray will be interviewing shortly, right after his reading in Livingston. Yeah. So, but you have mentioned, and something I'm really interested in, I think initially the program started just featuring writers reading from their most publications, recent things, but you're talking about a whole different oral tradition that involves people other than just writers. Tell us a little bit about that whole aspect of your program that I think is fairly new. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. The storytelling event was started just a few years ago with Bex Frucht, Tessa Mokel, Kate French, just a few writers here in Livingston. Bex gave herself the title of Story Wrangler, and she helps identify those folks in the community whose stories need to be told. You can think of it as akin to the Moth storytelling event that launched from, I think, NPR a few years ago. And we do it twice a year at the Elks Club. They're always really fun events, ways to feature local stories. This time our theme is Full Send, so times people were taking the leap, taking a dive of faith into the deep end. And it's a way to get people on the stage that might not already be on the stage because of the written word or because of anything else. It's great to see introverts up there telling their stories, and Bex does a great job coaching our storytellers to help them practice that oral art of storytelling.
I do think it's funny that it's at the Elks Lodge. How appropriate. You only have to remember one thing, series and where it is, correct? And has the community been supportive?
Absolutely. It's often standing room only. We get tons of applications for folks to tell their stories, so much so that we're already considering doing pop-up storytelling events with the high schoolers and the middle schoolers, starting that oral tradition earlier, and doing more storytelling workshops. We're actually partnering with one of our lecture series readers and writers, Colin McCann, who will be here in January. He has a wonderful organization called Narrative 4 that Elk River is partnering with to offer a storytelling workshop for local nonprofit leaders. We really want to emphasize the importance of storytelling, not just as an art, but as a skill. It's the way we articulate to each other what matters, and we do that through our craft and through our art.
Why do you think Livingston is such a hotbed for writers, poets, artists, film directors? I know so many of them, but it's very unusual that here in this little windy city outside of the major metropolis of Bozeman, what is it about Livingston?
It's a question we are all debating all the time at the Murray Bar, the Mint, on any given Saturday night. I think it was Tom McGuane that said, "Wind is the price you pay for space." And I think it's space that gives artists room to breathe and think. I also think there's something special about a town where a river runs through it. We're approaching the 50th anniversary of that very important novella. And I was born and raised in Missoula, and you can often find me walking across the bridge home from one too many drinks out at the bar saying, "A town where a river runs through it." And that's also how I feel about Livingston, having a body of water that's moving through the landscape. I think spurs something in those with sort of an artistic soul.
That's so interesting. Tell us a little bit about the structure of your organization. Do you, you're the executive director, but do you have a board of directors too that helps sort of plan?
Yeah, we have a wonderful board of directors chaired by Marianne Vollers, who's a longtime writer, used to work for Rolling Stone. Jamie Harrison is on my board and is often helping us drive the lecture series forward. We have a number of other significant and wonderful board members who are both writers in their own right and also just thinkers about how to create that future literary heritage of Park County. So I work closely with the board and C. Marie Furman on this writing workshop. I'm new to the role, so I'm still sort of getting my sea legs underneath me and understanding what exactly our community needs to thrive and to create that future literary heritage. But I just sit above here where we are today, Corby, above the Parks Reese Gallery in this little bird's nest. I get to look over all of Parks's art all day long and enjoy this literary and artistic haven where we live.
Like all nonprofit organizations in Montana, there are all kinds of financial challenges. How is your organization supported financially?
Yes, question of the hour coming up on end of year. We are generously supported by a combination of grants and individual donors. I have to thank our neighbors, AMB West, right next door. They've done a ton to support Elk River Arts and Lectures. But we're also supported by individual donors from across the state and across the country, folks who are just interested in really helping the literary heritage of Livingston thrive and grow and blossom. So if you're interested in donating, Corby, thank you for setting me up for that. To elkriverarts.org. We also are supported by a number of other wonderful grants, PCCF, which is right across the street, the Park County Community Foundation, as well as, you know, the Dennis Washington Foundation. We're so very lucky.
You were relatively new to this position. I know that you were born and raised in Montana, in Missoula, and you have moved to Livingston. I want to know a little bit about your background.
Yes, absolutely. Missoula girl, go Grizz. We're undefeated right now, feeling very, very fortunate for that. I did my undergrad in Portland, Oregon. I felt it was important to fly away from home, at least for a few years, and then slowly, circuitously made my way back home, spending time in Billings on John Tester's 2018 reelection campaign, living in Helena for about a year, spent about a year in Bozeman, and then made my way over the pass, as so many of us do, to land in Livingston. My partner, Ben Weyer, he owns and operates Yellowstone Coffee Roasters. So we're very tethered to this place. He grew up right on the Bozeman Pass, and we're so lucky to have family within just a few hours distance where we now get to build and grow our life. I'm also a writer. I like to make poems, and I finished my MFA about a year and a half ago. So I now get to work in the world, which I love so much, and then spend my off hours writing poems.
And I don't know if we prepped you for this, but would you happen to have some of your work that you could share with our listeners?
Would be happy to, Corby. This is a recently published poem in an online journal called HAD, and it's called Self-Portrait. Self-Portrait, my unrequited fear, my unsequestered fear, my fear that doesn't make sense, snakes, my fear that does make sense, children, My girly fear about manhood, armpit hair. My boyhood fear about motherhood, love. Fear I'll find my dog hit by a school bus, all the students experience a thud. Fear I'll answer the door to a fallen soldier. I know no soldier. I know my fear of aging hands, where it came from, a friend's mom who scolded me when I didn't wear sunscreen. My fear of the dark, my fear of getting lost in the woods, my newly acquired fear of paper cuts, death of a thousand. I'm the needle in a haystack. I'm actually the hay. Fear of dying, not being dead, fear of being dead and missing the party. Fear I popped my spine one too many times in that Virginia City hotel room. I was warned. I didn't listen. Fear of misreading the signs, fear of Tuesday and Sunday, fear of yes, fear of no, fear of the trailer window breaking when I toss my head back to laugh. I sit forward and the glass confuses my eyebrow. Fear of harnessing no skills, fear of harnessing any horse, fear I don't know how, fear I knew how once. Fear I forgot how now, reins in my hands, knotted like a head of hair.
Yet a lovely poem. I'm interested in teaching. I had a program, Writer's Voice, and we had a program supported by the Reader's Digest Fund. We had Writers Community, and we would bring in writers for 6 consecutive weeks, usually on Saturday, and it was sort of a master level class. Well, most of the writers in Montana taught here, including William Hartsburg, Rick Bass, Pete Fromm, David Cates, all these different writers. It was a wonderful experience, but it was for adults with people that were pretty serious about writing. What kind of workshop, what's the setup that Elk River does here in Livingston?
We've done all sorts of different workshops. Our primary workshop is for, you know, more developed writers who are interested in really investing in their craft. That's that workshop out at Chico that C. Marie helps lead. We've also had great success leading workshops that are more for the writer at play. Recently, I led a poetry workshop at the Senior Citizen Center, really leaning into that intergenerational model of learning, where we had a 12-year-old and a 75-year-old writing next to each other using the same prompts. I focused that writing workshop around mirrors and what we find when we look in the mirror, what a mirror can be composed of or made of. And that format was, you know, two Tuesdays, 2 weeks in a row. So a lot lighter lift than traveling all the way to Montana and sequestering yourself out at Chico Hot Springs. My favorite workshop, which I keep coming back to, is our Poetry in the Classroom program, where, you know, we send Michael Earl Craig and Max Hortzberg and Mark Bodine and Tessa Mokel into the classroom to teach these fourth graders about metaphor and image and taking those things to articulate feeling. And those are usually 4 or 5 sessions throughout the school year that culminate in a wonderful chapbook that I'm happy to provide any of your listeners. I'll pop it in the mail over to them. And at the end of the year, they also get to do a reading where the fourth graders read their poems to the third graders so the third graders can see what they'll be doing in the year ahead. And it's the most wonderful writing workshop I could ever dream of being a part of. Those fourth grade brains, they're just made for poetry.
The value of having a poet as a teacher is just unlike anything else. And I'm sure you have experienced that with students.
Absolutely, Corby. I really find that heading into the classroom helps those students think about intentionality and specificity in a way that they're already doing, but they might not have the language or opportunity to do so. We often hear at least 1 or 2 kids say, "I've never met a real life poet," like it's a poet in the wild or a unicorn that they can't believe they came across. And I'll say that I discovered poetry through this exact program in Missoula. I think it was through the Montana Arts Council or Montana Humanities that was sponsoring it, but we had Mark Gibbons come in and teach us poetry, and I remember the reading. My mom still has my chapbooks. One of my poems starts, "I am from politics," just this audacious fourth grader with big dreams. And that was my sort of long path to get to this point, was starting with those fourth grade poems. I still have all of the fourth grade chapbooks books up on our wall here, and I like to revisit them, especially when we're feeling sort of down and out about the state of the world. There's so much hope in those pages, and so much risk that that adult poets might not remember to take always.
I have a floodgate of memories. One of the poets we had, who was one of our first Montana Poet Laureates, was Henry Robert. And he went to all kinds of rural schools. And I remember kids saying, I didn't know that Indians could be poets. Mm. And he sort of laughed about it and then talked about the oral tradition. But there were also kids that thought poets were all men, mm-hmm. or that they were all old people. I love the opportunity of exposure. So who are some of the people that are teaching in your schools?
How I originally got involved with Elk River Arts and Lectures was by teaching poetry in the fourth grade classroom. It really is the best buoy. If you ever need some lightness in your life, just head into a fourth grade classroom. I'm now in this role lucky enough to support Michael Earl Craig, who is a former Montana Poet Laureate, lives up in the Shields Valley and is a farrier before he's a poet, shoeing horses. And I share that just because every time Earl gets in the classroom with fourth graders, he's teaching them about horseshoes and horse poems and how we can write poems about anything. We've got Mark Bodine, who owns Elk River Books and serves on our board here at Elk River Arts and Lectures. We've got Max Hjortsberg, who's of the Livingston Literary Heritage, whose father was a writer. And we've got Tessa Mokel, who's a speech-language pathologist here in town and who's a wonderful young poet who's sort of coming into her own. All of those folks head into the classroom four or five times every single year and really expand on what these kids are already learning from the wonderful teachers in their fourth grade classroom. And it's fun. We get to join the classroom and we also get to take them into the library where they're able to sort of think outside the box of the classroom. We get to break rules as poets. That's sort of the first thing we teach them is, do you have to use punctuation? No. Do you have to use capital letters? No. What if something doesn't make sense? That's okay. One of my favorite poetic myths to dispel is that poetry needs to be beautiful. And it's always very moving to me when the fourth graders say, poems can be ugly, they can be gross, or they can be about video games. They don't have to be about nature. We're in this wonderful literary place where so much of our inspiration comes from the natural world. But I'm always so excited when the kids are writing about March Madness or Fortnite, because then they get to play with whatever language they want and they're not within those boxes or constraints.
Lovely. I just remembered also a poet telling the kids it could be more about just what you see. It can be like things you smell or feel. And the kids were like, oh, it can be smell stuff? And this little boy wrote this poem. He said, on Thursday, my town stinks because they burn the trash during, and when it's a windstorm, the whole city smells like trash. And the poet said, I think you need to write a poem about that and let everybody know. And he was so empowered that poetry not only was a way to tell the story, also a way to make change. Well, Livingston is a very lucky place to have this program. It's great that you have writers here, that you're serving not only the adult audience, but reaching out into the schools. We just interviewed the woman that runs the program in Roscoe, Montana, and talk about a small town. What is it that draws people in? Is it a community? Is it the quality of the writers? What makes this work for you?
Mm-hmm. It's such a great question. I've been thinking a lot about it's Indigenous Peoples Day, and so I'd be remiss not to acknowledge that and say that I do spend a lot of time thinking about the ancestors and what it means to be a good ancestor, to stand on the shoulders of the ancestors that came before us who did the best they could with what they had, and then to do my part to be a good ancestor for the next generation. So I think it's in part that there is this legacy, that word I keep using, that we get to stand on top of. There's also writers that existed here that we didn't know existed, and we still don't know. A lot of women, I'm sure, were writing wonderful poems that weren't in the world because women weren't allowed to be writers. Indigenous writers that are just now coming to the surface for us to study and engage with and read. So I think that's one part of it. I also think the small nature of a place creates a container where we can all then have room to play and engage with one another. Livingston and Park County is a place where you are expected to take care of your neighbor, and you can't have road rage because you're going to run into that person at the grocery store. And I'm sure Roscoe is like that as well, if not even more so. And so when you're all headed to the Murray Bar after any given reading, you all get to engage with each other. And that doesn't mean we're not challenging each other or asking thought-provoking questions or pushing against each other to push into the future. But it does mean we have to do it with kindness and thoughtfulness and grace. And I think that's my favorite part about doing this work in a small community like Livingston. We get to take care of each other. And sometimes that's by challenging one another, but mostly that's just by sort of walking hand in hand into the cold river.
There is such a variety of programs. Without the specific dates, tell us some of the kind of programs, some of the writers that you either have had, or maybe some of the writers that you would like to have coming in to Elk River Arts and Lectures.
Yeah, wonderful. We've got a great lecture series up ahead of us. Shan Ray, who you recently mentioned, Corby, we're so excited to welcome back to Elk River Books. We've also got Todd Goddard, who's a local writer. He commutes from Utah back to Livingston. That's how much he loves it here. He just wrapped up a Jim Harrison biography, and it just includes so much rich history about this place and the literary legacy that we keep referencing. We're also presenting a review of Clark City Press, which is the press that Russell Chatham did his best to start. Jamie Harrison, Jim Harrison's daughter and a writer of her own right, will help lead that forward. And Rick Bass will join us there as well. We're welcoming a ton of wonderful writers throughout the remainder of the year, Colm McCann being one of them, and a wonderful Irish storyteller. We really try to keep our authors diverse, not just those authors that have a direct link to Montana, though we do love to empower and uplift our Montana authors. I am, of course, always selfishly interested in bringing more poets here and more young poets. Mary Ruffel is a pipe dream. She's a Vermont-based writer, but I also am thinking about a poet we recently had named Ilya Kaminsky, who is from the Ukraine and who's deaf and who was talking a lot about the poetics of place and the poetics of the body. So we're thinking big picture about who to bring here, not just those Montana-based poets or writers with a Montana connection, but writers who can feed and nourish the soul of this place.
I've heard you mention twice Colm McCann, and I thought, like, maybe I didn't hear right. That is the Colm McCann? Yeah. I've read every book he's ever written. Yeah. How did he end up in Livingston?
You know, we're just lucky. We're starting to develop a reputation for a place that writers want to be. And so he'll be here. He's going to spend his time on a little microscopic writing retreat and read his newest book to us. And that will be the narrative for, that's his nonprofit organization. They'll lead nonprofit leaders in Park County through a storytelling exercise and workshop. So we'll not only get to learn from him via his reading and his lecture, but we'll also get to learn from him the real skill of crafting that story in an effort to uplift these nonprofits that are doing such important work in the Valley.
I'm a little jealous. I live in a big city, and I'm thinking maybe I should move here too. I mean, I'm not a writer, but I would be at every lecture, at every reading. What a wonderful thing is going on here in Livingston. And Yetta Stein, thank you for joining us and telling us more about Elk River Arts and Lectures.
You've been listening to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains, produced by Corby Skinner, Jennifer Corning, and Ken Siebert for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music by Alex Nauman. Hear this program anytime online at ypradio.org.